The National Broadcasting Company and its affiliated independent stations present The Eternal Light, a program which comes to you under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, currently marking its year of dedication. Today we present a memorial program honoring the late Governor Herbert H. Lehman, who died on December 5, 1963. The program is a rebroadcast of a conversation with Governor Lehman, recorded for The Eternal Light in the spring of 1963. NBC News correspondent Edwin Newman interviewed the governor on the original broadcast. At the conclusion of today's program, you will hear a tribute to the late Governor Herbert H. Lehman by Rabbi Louis Finkelstein, Chancellor of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. And now to open our special program, here is NBC News correspondent Edwin Newman.
When Herbert H. Lehman died, he was on his way to Washington to receive the nation's highest peacetime award to a civilian, the Presidential Medal of Freedom. This is the award citation he never got to hear. Citizen and statesman, he has used wisdom and compassion as the tools of government and has made politics the highest form of public service. Governor Lehman's record of public service was indeed impressive. It spanned 60 years and embraced such diverse areas as business, state affairs, national concerns, international problems, religious affairs, and philanthropy. His political career was highlighted by 4 terms as governor of New York State, 2 terms as United States Senator, and a period of service as Director General of what has been called the world's largest humanitarian operation, the United Nations Relief and Rehabilitation Administration. This record was recalled in the tributes to Governor Lehman by many of the distinguished leaders who attended his funeral service. President Lyndon Johnson paid him honor, as did many other notables from this country and abroad. Along with wisdom and compassion, another quality of the man is echoed and re-echoed, his refusal ever to back away from an issue for political purposes. I suspect that Governor Lehman would have cherished this mark of respect as deeply as any other tribute, for this was his credo. Never try to compromise with your convictions. Herbert Lehman never did. His biographer, Alan Nevins, described Herbert Lehman as a fighter for liberal ideals. When I talked with Governor Lehman, I asked him about his conception of liberalism.
Well, as I view the situation, I would define liberalism as love of freedom and equality, concern for the underprivileged, a deep passion for justice, and a belief in universal brotherhood. And liberals must wage a never-ending fight for the realization of these fundamental goals.
Governor Lehman, your family came to New York shortly after the Civil War, and you were born and raised in New York City. And then you went on to Williams College in Williamstown, Massachusetts. Now, you did that in spite of the fact that your older brother Irving, to whom you were devoted, went to Columbia College, and the fact that your father wanted you to attend Columbia. How did that come about?
Well, rather an amusing story, I think. My father had 4 sons. He made up his mind he would like the 2 older sons to go into business with him in New York. He wanted his 3rd son to become a lawyer. My brother Irving not only became a lawyer, but of course became the head of the judiciary system, department of the state, serving for many years as chief judge of the Court of Appeals. Then he wanted his younger son to become an engineer. I was the younger son, and I can honestly say that I don't believe I've ever known a man who has less mechanical or scientific understanding. I can't drive a nail straight, much less build a bridge or a road or a great building. But I didn't argue with my father very much. We didn't in those days, although my father was a very kindly man. I said, all right, if that's what you want, I'm going to do it. I didn't have any particular preferences either. So I took my examinations for the School of Mines at Columbia. And by some miracle which nobody has unraveled, I passed my examinations. So I was headed for Columbia School of Mines in the profession of engineering. Well, I had a teacher of history, Frank Irwin, who was a very good friend of mine. I was devoted to him, and I think he liked me. And he made up his mind he was going to intervene. So he went to my father and he said, Sleeman, this is none of my business, but I can warn you that if you insist on your son Herbert becoming an engineer, you will probably spoil what may be a good businessman, or may be good in some other profession, and make a simply rotten engineer out of him. So my father, being wise, said, well, what would you do? And Mr. Irwin said, well, I would send him to a small college, preferably my own, which is Williams. That's how I went to Williams, and I never regretted it.
Well, at Williams, you tried your hand, I believe, at sports and at dramatics. How well did you do?
I was a very lonely boy the first year I went to Williams. I was the first boy of my faith who had come to Williams in 50 years. The boys had known of Jews, but I don't think many of them had met them, because a large percentage of them lived on farms and in small communities. And I was a very homesick boy. And an incident happened at the end of my freshman year. I was on the squad of the track team. The captain of the team was Harry Patterson, who later became a well-known surgeon down here in New York. One afternoon when I had been trotting around the track for what seemed to me endless miles, I was in the getting dressed in the locker room, and Patterson came by and he hit me on the back and he said, Freshman, you're not going to make the team this year, but I admire your spirit. Well, if you had given me $1 million, it wouldn't have meant as much to me as that word of encouragement. And I think it was the turning point in my whole college career. And I've told the story many times because I think we older people should remember that, give encouragement more frequently than we do.
Governor, after Williams, you started your business career in New York, but you also found time to do volunteer social work at the Henry Street Settlement.
Yes, I first went into the textile business. My salary was $5 a week, and which seemed an awful lot to me. And when I got my first $5 bill, a nice crisp bill, I made up my mind that this was worthy of being memorialized, and I wanted to have it framed so as to always have it and show it to my family. $5 was a double of a lot of money to tie up. So I had the bill changed from $5 to 2 2s and a 1, and I had one of the $2 bills framed. But then I became very much interested almost immediately on graduation from college in the Henry Street Settlement. I had met Lillian D. Wald in about 1897 through Jacob H. Schiff, a great citizen of the city, great philanthropist, and one of the leading businessmen. I helped her a little bit, and many of my friends of my own age, did some work, club work, down at Henry Street Settlement. She herself, Miss Wald, came to New York from Rochester for the purpose of doing nursing, and she became the head of the visiting nurse service of New York. Well, I took a club, the second club that had been organized at the Henry Street Settlement. It was called the Patriots. I tried to teach them my concept, tell them about my concept of democracy. I tell them that what I thought it took to be a good citizen and an active citizen in community affairs. I remember once I told them about democracy and about the blessing we had in this country of being able to vote for whomever we wanted without any limitation whatsoever. And that we were also fortunate in having a secret ballot. That impressed them. And then we proceeded to have our election. It was a secret election. Each boy had a little piece of paper on which he was to write the name of his choice for president of the club. And I opened the results. I found that there were 13 boys, and each boy had voted for himself. But it was a great little club. I remained very friendly with the Henry Street Settlement.
To this day, Governor Lehman, we know that the Henry Street Settlement remains close to your heart. You're one of its directors. And one of your contributions to the settlement has a very personal meaning for you, I know.
Well, that's what is called Pete's House. That is a building which we erected in memory of my oldest son, who was a fighter pilot in the last war and didn't come back. And it's been most useful to the community. Boys and girls use it every hour of the day and late into the evening. It's a meeting place for them.
There's another manifestation of your great interest in children, Governor Lehman. That's your recent contribution to the Children of New York, and I think it's fair to say to their parents also. That's the Children's Zoo in Central Park. What inspired that gift?
Mr. Lehman and I were approaching our 50th anniversary, and we wanted to show in some tangible way our great gratitude to the blessings which we've had. Mr. Lehman and I have always loved zoos. We remember going up to the Bronx Zoo when our children were very young, and then later when our grandchildren were young. Mrs. Lehman gave a great part of her time for months and months to watch the work and to help in any way she could. She was particularly active and useful in the decoration of the buildings and the design of the buildings. The zoo was dedicated on September 28, 1961. The attendance has been far greater than we had anticipated. And judging by the countless letters which we get from children and adults alike, I feel very confident that the zoo is bringing enjoyment to many children.
I'm sure you are justified in your confidence. Governor Lehman, your philanthropic interests reflect your concern not only for the material well-being of people, but for what might be called the spiritual ideals of liberalism. As a matter of fact, it's been calculated that you belong to and contribute to about 300 organizations, many of them religious institutions, and one of them the Jewish Theological Seminary of America. Can you tell us something about your interest in the seminary?
I think this figure of 300... I'm not responsible for that.
That I think was, you are responsible.
Well, I meant it was the calculation of the number, the count, rather, was made by a secretary of mine who was with me for about 30 years, died 6 or 7 years ago. Certainly the number, however, since then has not decreased. One of those interests is the Jewish seminary. I've taken a great deal of interest in that for many years. It's rather peculiar, too, that I should, because I'm of the reform group of Judaism. The seminary is of the conservative group. There is, of course, a third one, the Orthodox. All I wanted to know was that a man was Jewish in his outlook. When I say Jewish in his outlook, had the same deep faith that I think men should have, men of all faiths, not only Jewish, and led a reasonably decent life. I'm not deeply interested in ritual or in form. My interest is in the degree of faith that is behind those who practice religion.
Well, the Institute of Talmudic Ethics was named after you at the seminary. Is there a particular reason for it having been named?
Well, the only reason that I can see is that I had long been a director. I'm chairman of the Board of Overseers, and some of the faculty and trustees felt that they would like to honor me by calling this school after me, and it has been called after me. I think my interest in the seminary comes largely from the faith that I acquired early in life, faith in the fundamental ideals and traditions of Judaism. Love and respect for one God who is the God of everyone.
Your concern, Governor Lehman, for the entire human family was certainly reflected in your activities as Director General of UNRWA. UNRWA is said to have alleviated more suffering and more misery than any human institution ever did before. In spite of that, you've said that was the only task you ever took up, that you left with a sense that it was unfinished. Why was that?
First of all, I want to say that of all the responsibilities and tasks which I've been privileged to take on, none has ever given me anywhere near the satisfaction, soul satisfaction, that UNRWA did. It was by all means the greatest relief and rehabilitation organization in the entire history of the world. We spent nearly $4 billion. The reason it gave me such great satisfaction is because I could see the results of the work we were doing.
On the political side, sir, you have had your share of winning and losing battles and good causes. If you were to look back now, which victories would you pick out as the most important during your terms in the Senate?
Well, Miss Newman, my career was not based so much on victory as on preserving the principles and the purposes which were involved. For instance, in the McCarthy struggle, I was not the only one who beat him. I was, of course, one of the first and possibly the most aggressive. But there were many other men who were deeply interested and active in the fight against McCarthy. It was a pity that when he finally was censured, it was not so much on the ground of principle as on the ground of his having affronted the Senate. And I felt that to that extent we did not gain the victory which I had hoped for.
You also fought against the McCarran Act, I believe?
Yes, I fought against it even before I became governor. And I think McCarran was the most arrogant man that we had in the Senate during the years I served there, nearly 8 years. It's been a perfectly useless bill, and nonetheless gave at that time, and still gives, the power to abuse the privileges and the rights of many people. I also fought for the civil rights and liberties continuously. There, too, I carried on that fight long before I went down to Washington while I was governor. And we did get through a number of bills which were of importance. And finally, I fought for the passage of social legislation. You know, in the state of New York, and I feel very proud of this, in 1935, the only year, by the way, the Democrats had control of both houses of the legislature. And we had control of it by just one vote, a majority of one. We passed more labor and social legislation of value than had ever been passed before in the state. In fact, George Meany, the head of the AFL-CIO, characterized that session as having passed more and better legislation, labor and social legislation, than had ever been passed by any state in the Union.
Governor, we've mentioned Alan Nevins, the historian, Pulitzer Prize winner, who recently wrote a biography of you called Herbert H. Lehman and His Era. In talking about your work as a senator, he notes your commitment to principle and its effect on your work in the Senate. He says that despite your experience in practical politics, you found it difficult to compromise when you were in the Senate. Now, would you perhaps have been able to accomplish more if you had been more ready to compromise?
Well, Mr. He's perfectly right in mentioning that and raising the question. It's a question which I myself have raised about myself many times. Newman, I don't know. It's quite possible that if I had been willing to compromise more freely, and I did compromise occasionally, but not on principle, I would have gotten more bills through. Now, I'm quite certain that if I was confronted with the same decision now as I was at that time, I would take exactly the same position.
Do you feel that the state of the world today encourages greater social idealism in young people than the world of your youth presented to you?
I think it does. For this reason, I think that the young people are far better educated than we were. They have education advantages that we didn't have through the development of mass media, the radio and television, the growth of the newspapers. I think many more of them have a desire to go into some kind of work that is going to be of benefit to the world. Today, of course, with the difficulty of the uncertainty of what he's going to do after he leaves college, with the certainty that we're going to live in the Cold War for at least a very protracted period, and he doesn't know what's going to happen to him. It's very natural he should be confused. But he is confused, and we want. And another thing I think, I'm justified in being a little critical, is that I think they put too much emphasis on conformity. And that's particularly true with the very young, the adolescents, who just hate to do anything that the boys and girls around them don't do. And I hope they're going to outgrow that as they get older. But at the present time, there's a great unreasonable amount of conformity, in my opinion, among the young people. I think there's too much conformity in business life, too. This emphasis on conformity has taken away a lot of the imagination and the independence of thought, both among the very young people and among young people who go into business.
How do you find the state of the world today, Governor? What do you think are the greatest dangers we face, and are you optimistic about our ability to face them?
Well, I find the state of the world today very depressing, very frightening. I think we're going to be able to triumph over our difficulties. I think we're going to be able to sustain our democratic liberal ideas, liberal actions. But I'm not minimizing the difficulty of doing so. And I do question whether we're going to be able to. I think, of course, the great problem is the problem of survival. We come frighteningly near the brink of war a number of times during the past 10 years. As I view the world, what's happening in it, I think we sometimes, even today, are frighteningly near it. We've avoided it. I hope to God we're going to. But you just can't shrug it off. I think the only thing we can do is to keep ourselves strong militarily. We have to do that. I think we must continue our efforts and insist on keeping the door open in every way we possibly can to peace and to a modus vivendi which will permit us to exist side by side with the countries that have different concepts, different views, and certainly different ambitions from what we have.
Thank you very much, Governor Lehman. It's been a great pleasure and a great honor to speak with you.
On behalf of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, its chancellor, Rabbi Louis Finkelstein, will deliver a tribute to the late Governor Herbert H. Lehman.
In thinking back over my many hours with Herbert H. Lehman, spanning more than 50 years from my student days at the Jewish Theological Seminary of America until we had the privilege of naming for him the School of Ethics, I am amazed to realize that each of our conversations dealt with some specific problem. Yet through consideration of what might be called business, we developed a warm relationship in which the governor was always a kindly and firm and beloved mentor. Some years ago, after I had struggled for hours with a businessman to explain the importance of training our youth and even our adults in ethics, he said, "I'm not sure I understand what you mean by these words, but I do know what you mean by Herbert H. Lehman." Like so many others, this man was able to follow the human guide when abstract principles were beyond his comprehension. And Moses remarks the Bible, speaking of the great prophet who had descended from Mount Sinai with dazzling beams of light shining from his face, did not know that beams of light were emanating from him. One was impressed that Governor Lehman was utterly unaware of his immense influence, both on those closely associated with him and those who knew him only from afar. He was, of course, aware of his great abilities, but he could not know what the remarkable relationship between him and Edith Lehman meant to so many other husbands and wives, what his indomitable courage meant for others by nature less courageous, what his sense of duty meant in an age when many considered duty outdated and it appeared somewhat atrophied. His characteristic directness was taken for granted. A man he was trying to interest in a cause, who felt drawn to it out of respect for the governor, finally remarked, "Governor, if you will tell me to do this, I will. But I am not really convinced. Should I do this because you tell me to?" The governor, whose sense of duty never faltered, replied without hesitation, "You have asked a direct question. You are entitled to a direct answer. The answer is no. I'm trying to persuade you of what is right. I'm not trying to make an automaton of you. Thus it was natural for the seminary to name for him the School of Ethics it founded at the time of his 80th birthday. We were seeking to develop students who might in their lives emulate the virtues Herbert H. Lehman exemplified. He attended some sessions of the school with students who were 60 years his junior. He gave these unformed youths an ideal of service which enriched and educated him and those about him throughout his life. Such a spirit, say the rabbinic sages, in common with the sages of all traditions, is not subject to death, except in the physical sense. The servant of man, who loved his fellow human beings and strove to help them, was also the servant of their father, who will certainly, as the psalmist says, make known to him the paths of eternal life in which he can enjoy forever the pleasantness which is God's reward for a righteous and saintly life.
Thank you, Rabbi Finkelstein. Today, the Eternal Light presented a memorial program honoring the late Governor Herbert H. Lehman. This program was a rebroadcast of a conversation with Governor Lehman and NBC News correspondent Edwin Newman, recorded for the Eternal Light in the spring of 1963. Kenneth McGregor was director, and Robert Allison was editorial consultant. If you would like a copy of today's program, please send your name and address, with 10 cents to cover the cost of postage and handling, to the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, 3080 Broadway, New York 27, New York. The Eternal Light is produced under the auspices of the Jewish Theological Seminary of America, currently marking its year of dedication. We invite you to join us next week when the Eternal Light will inaugurate a new series, Dreamers and Builders, presented in observance of the 20th year of the Eternal Light program series. Our dramatic program will be The Invincible Summer of Dr. Dooley, written by Milton Geiger. This is Bill Wendell. This pre-recorded program has been an NBC Public Affairs presentation.
This is the NBC Radio Network.